anyone has any questions for him.
Yes. Well, I'd like to make a comment. Unfortunately, Anna has left the room.
Yeah.
But as a point of clarification regarding the characterization of Durkheim's thought as not accounting for the ways in which society, in our language, culture, become embodied in sort of a non-conscious or explicitly thought-oriented manner. I just offer the examples out of the elementary forms of the religious life. I'm sorry, elementary forms of religious life, in which he illustrates these rituals conducted by the Arunta tribes that, in his descriptions, are always first observed through how the bodies react. This is part of, I think, the problem that one sometimes finds in Durkheim, where they say, well, he seems to be after an energy, right? He seems to be after something that is not capable of being explained by facts and must somehow be resolved by some sort of mystical operation. But what he's after there, and it surprises me that it is missed even 100 years later, is probably a more complex description of conditioned response, to simplify it, than had heretofore been seen. You know, the idea that, you know, hearing a certain drumbeat can evoke a complete world and set of cognitive orientations to a certain reality without having to think, what am I doing? Where am I going? Of course, and famously in his claims that the kind of Kantian categories of space and time are themselves kind of a posteriori, right, contra con, that those get shaped by social activities, is very much, I think, the counter-argument, although I don't know that it needs to be made, that Durkheim is not interested in or doesn't account for those bodily experiences that may be conditioned by one society or one's culture. I don't know if I've been clear there, but it's striking that in the elementary forms, this is the great bulk of what he's describing, and then he seeks to explain it at the level of culture. You know, the Australian tribes are not those groups of people for whom abstract culture is characteristic, right? It is that type of cultural activity that he thinks is the human universal, and abstract thought being a certain type of development of it, but always placed on top of that much more fundamental type of social activity.
Well, I think the clearest example of the embodiment, or whatever you want to, I mean, when he's talking, and especially when she's talking about food, right? He's talking about eating the totemic animal of your own tribe at the wrong time, or someone else's tribe when you're not supposed to, and actually having a violent reaction and getting sick and thinking that you might die. But actually getting sick when the food itself should not, I mean, that's a pretty clear, but yeah. Talk at you for a second. Well, one thought, you said it being fundamentally secular in modernity, and I guess just the whole idea in general, isn't there something secular, fundamentally secular, about that whole, you know, will, you know, to more will, because it can only exercise itself here, even if it eradicates itself. I don't know if that makes any sense. And then there seems like another, the difference between the megalomania of an individual like a Caligula and a group, because it's like the recognition of power is, and the like exercise of it is the only like legitimization of an identity like a Caligula. There's absolutely no cultural constraint on his behavior whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Whereas, so there's a sense of like, I mean, that's a kind of alienation. So the only way, the only identity is embodied power or whatever you want to say. But on the collective level, it is that you're still part of a group that is right. There seems like there's a big difference between those two things.
Well, that's what I meant to say, that no one that forms that group is by themselves a megalomaniac.
Right.
They rather form a megalomaniac as a group.
But are they then, is it two different things?
It's collective megalomania.
But is it, okay, so you're saying it's the same thing on two different,
but it seems
like it's, I don't know. It's interesting to think about. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think it's kind of like really, I mean, poignant and sad that, you know, we can put both Caligula and the Christian right. Like, we can put them both in a category of megalomania. Like, I think it's, I mean, I'm not saying like together, but I think it's, no, I think that's like a sad kind of statement about our need. Your people's need to be right, you know.
Yeah.
To have that power.
What I meant to do with Caligula wasn't, obviously there's he's a much more unethical, crazy, I didn't mean to equate him, I meant to extract his subjective motives and kind of form
them. But they're very similar. I mean, it's kind of scary to me. I'm seeing them very similarly.
Well, the one thing I would say in terms of when you're saying there's this historicist thing with the Marxists of the right versus like a Caligula where it's literally like the obliteration of any obstacle, American exceptionalism is only exceptional with something to be exceptional compared to. So while there may be this idea of, you know, spreading this everywhere, it's still an identity only made possible in comparison. Because it's fundamentally a national identity, right? It's a national identity in comparison to other nations. Or the inherent competitiveness of national identity. At least an individual. Well,
I think you can say that maybe that has to exist for to begin, but that doesn't mean that it's not something that can progress to an idea that, let's say that like they had entire success and the entire world was enveloped with American nationalism. You wouldn't call it nationalism anymore, maybe, but it would be the new culture.
But I think ideologically, because you're saying that it's collective and ideological, I think ideologically there has to be some, it's an us versus them mentality at all times.
Yeah, but I think I still think there's that sentiment of spreading democracy because, I mean, that's what's supposed to legitimize these wars, isn't it?
But then there's also that idea of, you know, what was the policy? What did they call it? What did George Washington want to do?
Isolationism.
Yeah, isolationism.
Well, that's not American exceptionalism.
But in a way, it is. I mean, it's also you know the same. Close the borders. It's not close the borders and spread democracy. You know what I mean? It's not like let's close the borders and then go create America in Mexico. It's close the borders. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but there's still that it's. What I meant to say is that this is the ideal state of affairs and that the world should be this way. If the world was ideal, it would be this way, which is that sentiment of historicism, I thought.
sorry, I just had a really quick question. I actually just had a thought. Let's say that they were able to create a whole world full of little Americas.
Mm-hmm.
What then would they be fighting? Like, how would they then grab more power?
Well, that would be the consummation.
Would that be... Okay. Do you think there... But do you think it would be satisfying? Like, do you think it would be, like... Do you think it would end there?
Well...
I guess I just question, like, if there's, like, a... There's this, like, driving force to consume the will, but if it's not in an individual and it's a collective and it's something that can continue on from generation to generation, like, would it ever stop? Would it ever stop growing? I don't think I'm expressing myself well.
But their ideologies can change all the time when they're not... I mean, because it is a group, there are things where one person says one thing one way and someone says something another way, and so you can't even say that it's this... one ideal that they all want
right.
to happen. It's probably something that changes the maybe the fundamental fact that they have this strong will to just be most powerful.
Well, it's still that sacred and profane thing if you want to get back to Durkheim. You know what I mean? Like, there has to be some profane, you know, what is profane at the time might change in context. But it lives and breathes off of that separation.